Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. If you want to listen live, all you have to do is download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Also, if you want to catch this show on video, be sure to check out Zumo TV, channel 719. That's where you can find SportsGrid's Fantasy Sports Network. Enjoy the show, and thanks so much for listening.
And welcome back, Fantasy Sports Today, hour number two of our show. Of course, when anything happens in sports, we give it right to you here, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, right here on Sports Grid. This is Fantasy Sports Today. Craig Mish at Joe Pizzapia 17, and of course, on Twitter, at Sports Grid. With the lack of sports happening, we're trying to get you a little bit of a heads up on some of the NFL news and notes in terms of the futures bets. And if you go back on demand, watch all of our shows on YouTube, you can find all of the discussions that we have had. And we've given you, you know, our potential opinions on some of the over-unders in terms of player propositions for 2020. And today we're going to pivot a little bit, actually, Joe. We're still going to stick around with some of the same players, but we're actually going to head to the DraftKings sportsbook today.
Okay.
Why not?
There's as long as there's football to talk about on game, I know you really don't want to talk about it. I'm excited to talk about it because I'm stoked for football season, of course. The Fantasy Football Black Book is out on Amazon right now and number one bestseller already in fantasy sports. Day one, love that. I know the Purple Book, we knocked you down to, I think you're underneath
Quidditch. We're struggling.
You're underneath Quidditch and badminton. There's a couple other things. You're kind of down there, but I'm rooting for you, kid. I'm rooting for you. But it happens when the Black Book drops. I'll send you a copy of it. But I'm happy talking football, especially this next guy, because I think there's a lot of people that have been souring down on this guy. And kind of like Daniel Jones last year, he's going to have a better fantasy season than people realize.
All right. So we're going to talk about Drew Lock today. We're going to start off with him from the Denver Broncos. DraftKings has set his number at 3,450 yards. And a little bit of, you know, better odds here, too, by the way, on DraftKings for whatever reason on this one. Minus 110 to win 100 last year in five games. He threw for 1,000 yards. So prorating these numbers over the course of the season, it would be very close to this number of 3,450. And when Locke was in there, they played much better than they played with Flacco, who just really couldn't move toward the end of last year. So, look, it's going into year two. I personally saw improvements from Locke later on in the year. Unfortunately, in a couple of games, it didn't mean anything. So I'm still not 100% sold. I wasn't 100% sold on him in college either. But they have added some nice weapons. And my hope is that they see more of an opportunity to win in that division this year. And they also see more of an opportunity to play offense in 2020. Because the offense that they were playing for the majority of last year was just a disaster. It was running the clock as much as possible to just get out of town They weren't throwing the ball almost at all. And they did a little bit with Locke toward the end of the year, but it was ground control, really boring football games to watch. They'd hand the ball off to one of the two running backs, either Lindsey or Freeman. The clock would run down all the way to one. They'd hike it. It would run all the way to one. They'd hike it. They just played that game for about three games or four games last year. So if they're going to play that game again this year, then this is an under. And if not, and they decide, hey, it's time to open it up a little bit, then maybe it's an over. But I can't certainly say that I trust the situation, because if that was the case, that they drafted a first-round quarterback a couple of years ago in Paxton Lynch, it didn't work out either. So I'm on the fence with Drew Lock, really. And that's just kind of where I'm at.
And I can understand that. I'm using the phrase with Drew Lock, too big to fail. When you bring in Melvin Gordon, when you have Lindsey there ready, when you have Noah Fant, Jerry Jeudy, Courtland Sutton. I mean, everybody last year when Drew Lock took over, it was, okay, that's it. Forget it. Forget all your Courtland Sutton shares. They're all going to go down the toilet. Well, they didn't. They didn't. They were actually pretty good. So I don't think you draft Jerry Jeudy to just sit on the clock either. I don't see why you would do that. If you wanted to do that, there were other guys you could have selected and gone that route. So I'm hoping it's a little bit more. You did a very nice job earlier in the segment of basically extrapolating out the stats. I'm going to do the hyper mathematical version of this, which is Drew Lock basically last year was averaging 204 yards per game. This over under number of 34.50.5 basically is 215. So we're talking about an 11 yards per game difference. Now, that doesn't seem like a whole lot to me. When I boil it down to that, that makes me encourage that this number is actually pretty achievable. However, it's also right there, as you said, and it makes me a little bit afraid. I think if you came back with the season and said, hey, he was right at 3,500 yards, and you know, he didn't turn the ball over that much, I think that the Denver Broncos could be very competitive. But I don't see like this Drew Lock situation where he's going over, you know, 4,000 yards, like, or 3,800. I don't think that's the case either. So I'm a little afraid of that, but I think they can be successful at around 35. And I think that's very achievable. When I hyper focus it and give you that difference of just a mere 11 yards per game difference, does that entice you to take the over, or is this number you're still afraid of?
It's not afraid. It's just, I don't particularly trust the player yet.
And that's fair.
And the number, you know, it pretty much seems where it should be. So I don't really just get where the value is on 3,500 yards with him. So it's just not one that I like a lot. He definitely has more weapons around him for sure. I mean, that has to be acknowledged. Mm-hmm. But what is Denver's game plan having at least two really good running backs on their team? Like, what was the point of signing Melvin Gordon? You already had Lindsey. I suppose Freeman is gone. They'll probably cut him or just send him somewhere else. I'm surprised they didn't trade him during the draft for like a sixth or seventh round pick. But I mean, part of me feels like it's still a predominantly running team, and Fangio is more of a defensive guy too. So I'm not saying that it's under or over. I don't know enough about what they're going to do. And the idea that, oh, you know, John Elway, Denver Broncos, you know, I mean, John Elway, Denver Broncos, Paxton Lynch, you know, Brock Osweiler. So, I mean, there's no narrative that you could play to say, oh, yeah, he knows exactly what he's doing, because it's not the case.
No, look, I think they're going to be better than people realize. However, I don't want to go crazy with this number in the over, because I don't think you have Philip Lindsay and Melvin Gordon if you're not committed to running the football as well. So I think this is actually going to be a pretty balanced team. I think they're going to be better than people realize. Noah Fant is one of my favorite sleeper tight ends. Not that there is such a thing as sleeper, but in terms of a value of ROI, I think Noah Fant has a lot of upside. And I think he showed you a little bit, some flashes last year. And most rookie tight ends don't show you anything, but he showed you enough that you could say, all right, I think there's something to build on there. But, man, Courtland Sutton was terrific last year. Jeudy, I think, is going to be a stud. He is a stud. It's just a matter of, can everything click? I wish there was more time for them to all work together. I don't know how that's going to affect everything as well. But I think this is numbers to stay away, because I think it's basically spot on. And I think that number as a projection is actually a successful year for Drew Lock, to be honest with you. So I don't want to, like, go crazy with it either.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens with Drew Lock. That's the number over on DraftKings. If you want to get in on it, check it out. All right, 2020 player prop today. We're going to move on from one spectrum to the other, one that we don't know a lot about to one that puts together these fantastic seasons. Last year, unfortunately for Patrick Mahomes, a little bit of an injury kept him under his total. This year, DraftKings has put the number at 4,550 passing yards for Patrick Mahomes. He threw for 4,000 last year, 5,000 the year before that, and there's no question that he would have at least come close to that number. And look, Andy Reid is just still involved in this offense, and to me, the only thing that can stop him from getting close to 5,000 and getting over this number would be an injury, and that certainly does exist. We saw it there last year. In fact, we saw injuries a couple of times with Mahomes. So as long as he doesn't miss two games, I think we're good. I mean, my fear at the end of the year is Kansas City a 14-1 team heading into the last week? Remember, you got to use all of these games that are involved in order to hit your total. And a non-playing game from Mahomes in the last week could end up costing you. That would be my biggest fear here, is that it's pretty clear that the Chiefs are going to be really good. And, it could be a 10 or 11 win really good, but what if it's a 14 win or a 15 win and he ain't playing in the last week, mm-hmm. and you're sitting on 4,400 yards going, man, this guy had an MVP year, but you don't play.
I mean, that defense was really bad in Kansas City. They were terrible. They did improve last
year.
They
weren't really good last year.
They weren't really good, but they were improved. And I think that's something you have to consider. When you throw for 5,000 yards, that's because you're basically in shootouts every single week, and nobody can stop anybody. The Kansas City defense in the second half of last year played much better. I still think there's holes in it. I agree with you. I don't think that they're all-world defense. They're not the same defense that the Baltimore Ravens are going to be in some other teams. However, I think when you're talking about this equation of the 5,000 yards, that's what a 5,000 yard, like, that's what happens. It's like 5,000 yards happens because usually it's a combination of great quarterback, incredible weapons, and the need to use them. I don't know if they're going to have the need to use them to that extent. If you take last year's yards per game of Patrick Mahomes, which is 287, and multiply that times 16, you got 4,592. Very close to this number. So giving you that, and that little bit of information, does that change how you feel? Or you still think this is an easy over? Or is this a stay away for you? Because I got to be honest with you, I think this number is another one where I don't want to be boring today. And usually I'm the guy who's like, rah, rah, I'm going the over, I'm going the under, and I have passionate opinions. I think both these numbers are really spot on, and I don't like either one of them to put $1,000 of my money on, because like you said, if he sits out a game, that could be it. If the defense continues to improve, that could be it. If Clyde Edwards-Helaire really does show up into this running game and they can have a little bit more balance to the offense, that could hurt this number. So there's a lot of factors here that doesn't look like Patrick Mahomes getting closer to that 5,000. Maybe it's closer to 4,500.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. If I had to, I would go over if I had to. And I think that we've illustrated a lot, and not to be boring on a day like this, but we have illustrated a lot of potential bets that we like more than these. But I do worry a little bit about the end of the season. I do worry a little bit about injuries. But having to pick a side on this one, I'm gonna side with Mike Trout. I'm gonna side with Patrick Mahomes. I'm gonna go with LeBron James. like give me the best player, and I'll side with those guys as opposed to just flipping a coin on a guy that I don't really know a lot about. So that would be my preference here. The number isn't astronomically high, but it is high enough to say to yourself, man, like 4,300 yards for Mahomes would be a really good season still. And that's why it would be probably another pass for me.
Do you know there's only one person who's thrown for 5,000 yards more than once in their career?
5,000 yards more than once? Okay. Mm-hmm. Who is it? Breeze?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's it. Patrick Mahomes, Winston, Roethlisberger. Drew Brees in 2016, Drew Brees in 2013, Peyton Manning in 13, Drew Brees in 2012, Matthew Stafford in 2011, Tom Brady in 2011, Drew Brees in 2011, Drew Brees in 2008. I mean, and then of course Dan Marino in 1984. So 5,000 yards is tough. You know, doesn't grow on trees, boys and girls. And I think Patrick Mahomes, hey, I am president of the fan club, man. I love Patrick Mahomes. He's my favorite quarterback to watch play. I thought that he was grossly undervalued coming into the draft. I couldn't understand why people didn't see the talent that I saw when I looked at the film of Patrick Mahomes. But man, oh man, like 4,500 seems about right for a team that I think has got their aspirations in the playoffs. And that's my problem. It's like regular season, whatever. This is a playoff team. I don't think he needs to throw for over 4,500 yards this year.
Yeah, agree with that. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. We come back next. We head back over to DraftKings. We take a look at the tight end position. We haven't hit on these yet. We'll do it next, right here on Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid. Don't go away.
Hey, in-game live.
But it looks like East Coast, West Coast for the NHL, East Conference Tournament, Western Conference Tournament, NBA Finals, NHL Finals, NFL season, college football season, and then, oh, by the way, Kentucky Derby, U.S. Open, both golf and tennis. I mean, September is like the best month in the history of sport.
It is going to be, Jared, too sweet if you think about it.
Catch the program every single day on EVAN-TSY Radio and on the Sports Grid Network.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today as we kick around some discussion on the 2020 NFL season and look at some of the player props. And we're diving into DraftKings today. We've been covering a lot of the quarterbacks and the running backs. Today, we're actually going to be focused on the former 24/7 champ in the WWE. Who would have thought?
Today we're talking wrestling. Look at this. Finally, I knew if I stayed on this show long
enough. Over under on matches that Gronk will win in 2020. Let's set the total at a half.
In 2020, I'm going to say under because he's not going to wrestle again. Well, he's not going to wrestle again this year, but in 2021, I'd go over the half because the contract is good for a year up until WrestleMania, which means there's going to be some more Rob Gronkowski nonsense. But now that he's playing NFL football again, it's a no-no to the WWE for now. But I'll tell you what, the tight end position is in much better shape than it was a year ago. Last year, going into it, it was a wasteland. It was the top three guys. And then a bunch of nobody who knew what the hell was going to go on. I saw a lot of, I remember Mike Randall, who actually wrote for the Black Book this year, who works for Action Network. He was the guy that turned me on to Mark Andrews and said, look, you got to pay attention to this guy. I'm telling you right now, he's going to pop. And he did. And I was in a draft with him, but he took him. And I said, look, there he goes, taking this guy. But this year, there's a really good middle of the tight end tier that's got Evan Ingram. It's got Mark Andrews. It's like right after that elite group that you don't have to pay an arm and a leg for Zach Ertz or Kelsey or George Kittle. And instead, you pivot to that 1A group is really good. There's some names there. Even if you drop down to, the Jared Cooks of the world who, showed in that offense he's going to catch touchdowns at the very least, I think you can do a lot better. And I don't think Rob Gronkowski is a guy that you should be targeting outside of those wacky two tight end leagues, which are, I don't know why anyone tortures himself. You think two catchers bad? How about two tight end? Forget it. Terrible.
What kind of the league they call that?
Bad. Poorly
super,
thought out.
Super tight end flex.
Yeah, they call it a two tight end half flex with a mocha latte, something with the half calf.
Sounds good. I could use one. I could use one of those.
Somebody get us a coffee. We need more PAs to get us coffee. That's what we need. Fantasy Sports Today.
I have one right here.
Wait a minute. Did someone want a venti chai latte? There it is. Craig Mish pulls it out. Nothing up his sleeve, ever.
Not today. All right. So DraftKings set Rob Gronkowski's number for receiving yards this year. Pretty low, 600.5, and the total is -110. Of course, he didn't play last year. He went over 600 when he played 2 years ago. He got 682 in 2017. That's like the three-year figure. He had 1084. The reality is, what does this come out to? 40 yards a game, and he goes over it. It would seem that he could, and honestly, if Gronk was to have one big game with the Bucs, like 8 catches, 140 yards. Like, one game, you're probably going to hit this total, but I don't know if he's going to have that one game where he does that. So, I don't know. I mean, I could only go under. I would love to see an over here because it would make it exciting, but how could I possibly bet on this? It seems foolish.
It's so difficult because my heart is in. I love Rob Gronkowski. He's just fun. I mean, there's like, this is a guy, you say his name and you smile. I mean, if you don't like Rob Gronkowski, what's wrong with you? He's fun. Oh, my goodness. But look, 600 is tempting. It's tempting to go over. But the problem is you have to look at the game log in the last few years, too. I mean, last time he played in 18, 13 games. Year before that, 14. Year before that, 8. So the trend's not going in the right direction. I don't know, and none of us know, how his body's going to react of not playing football for an entire year. Maybe it's this incredible fountain of youth and it refreshes him and, oh my goodness, it's so great and fantastic. Maybe. And he looks at, but what I remember most about Rob Gronkowski was a guy in that last year where they won that final Super Bowl with him, was a guy that looked like he had absolutely lost a step, a guy that was gearing up for one last run off into the sunset, and a guy whose body looked like it betrayed him. He's wearing the elbow guard. He's wearing the knee things. He's wearing all these different things he's got because he was basically just held together with string. And I know he's in phenomenal shape, and I get it. Like, a year off from contact has got to be great. But it's not the contact I'm worried about. It's the step. And if he lost a step 2 years ago, I don't know what it looks like now. So for that reason, I'm going to stay away from this because my heart is in it, and I can't. I'm rooting for him to go over. But that's not a good reason to put my money down. And I think that's a good bit of betting advice out there for people.
Well, definitely don't bet with your heart. I mean, that's the easiest thing of all.
But but my head says I can't say he can't achieve this number, because the last time when all of that was happening, he was at 682. So he's basically around that same spot.
I mean, the question is, did the year off make him healthier, better, and more effective? Or did the year off destroy any chance of this happening? And that's what we don't know.
And O.J. Howard's still there. Not that it matters what O.J. Howard
now,
is.
But for now.
It wasn't like they just said, yeah, get by O.J. Howard. We believe in Rob Gronkowski.
Well, not yet. But, you know, listen, there's still months to go before this
in
happens.
In a standard league, I think Rob Gronkowski is going to catch some touchdowns. Like, I think that's going to happen. And, yeah, good point. Yeah, Brett brings up a Cameron Brace there, too. But I think, you know, Rob Gronkowski in a standard league as a tight end, I can understand, like, tight end 12, because – look, there's going to be some TDs go his way, but it's the yardage totals that I'm really concerned with.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably for me, I would lean under because I'm just not a believer that this can happen. And if he gets hurt at all, it's definitely an under 2. But yeah, I mean, it does scare me to think that, you know, pick any game during the regular season and give him 150 yards. He really doesn't have to do anything the rest of the season. And we have seen that from Gronk, although it's been almost 3 years since we have, so my lean would be, toward the under for sure. And
so would mine.
I think someone's going to make a mistake starting him at the beginning of the season, not rostering him, but starting him. I think that, you know, going into week one, probably expecting that would be a realistic expectation to think that this guy is going to catch 5 balls on game one. But save this video, go back and cold take.
cold takes. Warm cold breezes. Not hot takes, just warm breezes.
Right, warm breezes, right. okay, so TCU had a great receiver last year, Jalen Reagor. This is the first rookie wide receiver that we're taking a look at his totals here. DraftKings has set up his total pretty low also. I wish that this was a combined yardage because I could see him on punt returns. But 650 and a half yards, minus 110 to win 100. Certainly last year was a really down year for him. The quarterbacking was just – their offense was just a complete disaster last year, and I watched a lot of their games. I'm certainly not willing to look at last year and believe that that was an indicator. 2 years ago was when he had the monster year there. And just take a look at where he was taken in the NFL draft. If last year's stats meant anything, he never would have been taken. I mean, who gets taken with 600 receiving yards right in the first round of the NFL draft? So I'm a big believer in this player, but I'm also going to be realistic here. It's the first year. And a receiver in their first year is not always a great thing. In fact, it's very rare that a guy will come right out of the box as a first-year guy and end up being a star. What does he have for him to go over? He's got a quarterback that can throw it and throw it pretty deep. What also does he have going for him? He may be the best receiving option they have on that team. What does he have going against him? It's a new system. He is a rookie. I think that they're going to run the ball a lot more this year. And simply put, to ask a kid in his first year who doesn't know an offense to get 1,000 yards receiving usually is a lot. So because I like the kid, I want to go over. I do think in 2 years he's Steve Smith. I just don't know that it happens this year.
Well, we have a theme here, which is putting our personal feelings aside and our rooting interests away from our money. And I think that is very important that we're doing that. And I am with you on this. I think the Eagles need him to get above his number. And I am very pro Carson Wentz. I talked about him the other day on this very show when we were talking about his over-under for passing yards. And it wasn't that long ago where Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson were the two most coveted dynasty quarterbacks before guys like Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes rolled into town. So that's not that long ago. And then both of them, you know, tore ACLs in successive weeks, basically. And everyone just threw their hands up. He's like, well, I guess that season's over with. But I'm looking at this one and I'm saying to myself, the Eagles need him to contribute. I think 650 is a very reasonable number where he can have a good season. We can look back on it. Like you said, he can contribute on special teams as well, and he could be a very important player for this team. The trouble is, yardage-wise, 650 is a really good expectation for a rookie wide receiver that has a path to catches. He's still not the number one wide receiver. He's not the number one target on this team. So from a target volume standpoint, it's slightly concerning that they go over. If anything, I would go under, but instead I'm just going to stay away from it because, again, I think there's opportunity there for him to be right here. I think they need him to be right there if they're going to succeed. And I do think the Eagles will be a pretty good football team this year and a better offensive one than they were last year. I don't think they can be worse. There were a lot of things that did not go their way last year, a lot of health issues and a lot of other problems. But I think this year with Rager, with Miles Sanders full year, with hopefully something looking like a healthy Alshon Jeffrey, that the Eagles are going to contend once again for the East. But 650, man, that sounds just right to me. This is a bummer. I got no spicy takes here for the show where I'm having, man, I've been hanging out with Mitch too long. He's really made me sensible
even
after all these years. I don't like this at all. This is no fun. This is not good television. Me saying no to everything. Pass.
What is no. Outside of Randy Moss and maybe Owens and a couple others, what is the precedent? Maybe Julio Jones is another one, but what is the precedent to have a first-year guy just completely blow up? Larry Fitzgerald? I mean, I guess that there are some. It could happen. But very few guys that fit Rager's profile, too, which is not a huge guy, like 6 foot or under type guy, 6 foot one, 6 foot two. There isn't a lot of track record for a receiver right out of the box doing it. Now, look, they're not setting the number super high either. I mean, this is a guy, too, that can have one or two really big games and go off. Like another receiver that I liked a lot coming out of college and hasn't completely put it together, but I firmly believe if he was in a better offense, he would, is Anthony Miller on the Bears. I mean, that kid is super talented too,
but there's no quarterback.
I mean, it's just, there is no one there, but every time they throw him the ball, he catches it. Like, it's just,
I know. The problem is, what do you think of the quarterback play? And I don't think too much of it. Here, I'm going to go through some of the names of some of the better wide receivers, rookie seasons. Rookie season of 1070 for 23-year-old Amari Cooper in 2015. Julio Jones, who you mentioned. Keenan Allen in 2013 had a very good season. He was at 1046, so that's pretty good. Marquise Colston of the Saints in 06. A.J. Green, 2011. Kelvin Benjamin, of course, in 2014, that great wide receiver draft. Mike Williams of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 2010. Michael Thomas of the Saints. Mike Evans. So look, there's some guys, and Odell Beckham in 2014. That 2014 class had a very, very quick success rate, but it's pretty much like the names you hear are the elite level guys. And I don't know if I'm ready to put this name into that conversation. It's the guys who are incredibly difficult to guard. It's the Julio Joneses of the world. It's the Amari Coopers of the world. It's the Michael Thomas of the world. And I don't think he's in that class. Do you?
No. I think that he's a different kind of receiver.
I agree.
That's why I keep the comp with Steve Smith going, because I think that, you know, that's sort of the kind of guy he can be. Deshaun Jackson is probably, you know, ironically plays on the same team. Maybe he's another one of those types, but a little bit bigger than Deshaun Jackson, I think. So, look, hopefully this is a year two type thing. I'm hoping to get him in my Dynasty League draft, but I don't control the first or second pick in the draft, or third. So we'll have to see if I have a crack at him. All right, coming up next, it's time to go back in history a little bit more with us today. If you missed our shows the last few days, we're going into the old drawer and picking out some events that I've attended. We'll hit that next. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
And welcome back. It is time for our look back at some of the things that have happened in my history. I don't know.
The history of Craig Fish.
Is this any fun for you at all, seeing these old games?
Sometimes it is, yeah. I mean, look, we got to talk about something here. We got 2 hours here every day and no sports. Something's got to give, Craig Fish. But I actually think
Gone through old state. I mean, Brett will tell you we've gone.
Well, I wasn't here for the stadiums. I missed.
Well,
I mean, it
was 3 months worth of every single stadium and every iconic player that ever played for them. If we still have to do this in August, I mean, it'll be like Little League games I've played in and box scores from the 80s and 90s. Do you save ticket stubs at all?
I used to when I was younger. I did, but yeah, it's funny. Something happened, I guess, you know, as I got older, where material things, I kind of had a realization I wasn't into material things and holding on to stuff from my childhood. I was, because of those memories, but then it became all about my kids' stuff and things like that, not like mine. So that's a harder thing. Like, yeah, stuff from, like, you know, oh, this is their first, you know, little Mets shirt or their first little this or whatever. That now I'm like sentimental about that stuff because I'm a big softy. So but about sports things, no. And I think you're right. We talked about this on the show before. The more you're involved in covering sports, you still love sports. It takes away a bit of your fandom. It takes away a little bit of the gleam, a little bit of the shine off the rose. But I think it also, you know, in your spare time and the other things you enjoy, you kind of, I don't know about you, but I often tend to go away from sports. I go into music and films and things of that nature. So, you know, I definitely need a break from that world because, as great as to spend so much time in that world, like everybody else, sometimes you need a break from work, so to speak. Are you somebody like that too? Like, you need a definitive break, you know, or are you just okay sports all the time? Like, I know my buddy Bobby Sylvester, Fantasy Pros, he has no idea what a movie is. Like, he hasn't, it's all just sports.
Well, is he single?
No. Well, really? Getting divorced, but so.
Hello.
But you know, well, that's another story.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But yeah, I mean, I can break from it for sure. I can break from it. And again, I committed almost fully to baseball and football over the last couple of years. And there's only a certain amount of time for certain things. But for me, in the past, I tried to, again, cover as much as I could because I didn't know how long it would last. Fortunately, it has lasted well beyond the years that I thought. So as we dive in today, we're going to take a look at a couple of games, and one in NBA and one NFL, just random games in history. Just no reason for it, just a piece of paper that you guys could look at and say, wow.
I was there, Craig Bish.
I was really there.
It's like,
try to give you my memories from the game.
Yeah,
too.
This is like the Where's Waldo segment. Like, I think we should have a crowd shot from each one of these games. We could just point to like a random
point to a map.
Yeah, I'd say, look, there he is. There's Craig Mish.
Me and Speck go hand in hand. I think that's a good. All right, so May 26, 1997. This is the NBA playoffs, round one. The Miami Heat make the playoffs. And this is, and Alonzo Mourning is now there, and Tim Hardaway and this team, and the Chicago Bulls come to town. Now, where was this game in The Last Dance? I didn't end up hearing about it, seeing about it, or anything else. But the Bulls play the Heat. They have a 3-0 lead in the series. The rumors are that they went out, the Bulls, the night before and partying. And, you know, at this time, South Beach is coming into play. Who knows? But the Heat down 3-0 in a series, normally team sweep, the Heat gets a game. Why? Because Michael Jordan, I mean, you'd have to tell me if he had a worse game than this ever in history. And I remember he didn't play well. I don't remember it being this bad, but it was. 9 for 35 from the field.
Somebody was at South Beach. Somebody's having a very,
9 for 35?
Wow. That's very un-Jordan.
0 for 8 from threes?
That's very un-Jordan-like. But, hey, man, they felt they had in the bag. You might as well go enjoy a night in Miami. Did they win the series?
I think that's what happened.
Oh, you won the series, so.
What do you mean? They won the championship.
That's what it was a rhetorical question. I'm saying they won the series? Of course they did. But you know what? Michael Jordan said, I need a night off.
I guess so. I guess that's what happened.
You can have that much fun in South Beach if you're Michael Jordan, I'm pretty sure. You got a lot of money.
So the Bulls ended up winning the next game, and that was it. And by the way, Jordan didn't really have crazy numbers in this series, too. I went back and looked. But I remember being at the game, and I remember Jordan not playing well, but I certainly don't remember it going this badly. Hardaway had a great game. He had 25 points. This was really prime Hardaway at this point. And then Alonzo Mourning had 18 points and 14 rebounds. But, of course, this is not a game. If this indeed was Michael Jordan's worst playoff game, and I don't know how it could be much worse than this. I'd have to go back and look at history, but he didn't hit a single three, and he took 8 shots, and he missed virtually every shot he took. And that's why the Heat
still
ended
scored
up
18, though. I mean, you know.
Congrats. On 35 shots, I would hope he scored 13.
Hey, everybody has an off night.
You know who had a lot of these games? Kobe Bryant had a lot of these games.
What, Kobe Bryant just checked out bad?
Kobe Bryant would shoot 38 times and maybe only hit 12 or 13. Like, a lot. Like, that would happen because he would just take every shot. This would not happen a lot for Jordan. He wouldn't miss this many shots. So,
yeah, I don't remember this in The Last Dance. I don't remember this game. I think he blocked it out. I don't think the Jordan hype wagon talked about this game. I can tell you that much, that's for sure.
And the Heat played the Bulls twice, if I'm not mistaken, in the playoffs, and with Jordan there. And the first time they got swept, but it was the third game that they played the Heat and the Bulls was a crazy game. Glenn Rice had like 50 points. Jordan had like 60 points. That was before this. And then I guess this was the second time around that they played in the playoffs. The Heat got one playoff win in their history against the Bulls, and I was there at that
Tim game. Hardaway, by the way, tough player. Yeah, he had some really good years with the Warriors and then some good years over here with the Heat. He was tough. Like, he was one of those guys. I liked him. He had a lot of guts, man. I was a big Tim Hardaway fan. Another great player in the NBA, kind of, I don't want to say lost to the shuffle, but, like, you know, a little shout-out for Tim Hardaway there. I always liked him. Chris Mullin, those were fun teams to watch in Golden State.
For sure. All right, so that's our NBA game. Now let's move over to an NFL game. Now, I had to look this up because I didn't remember it that clearly, and then as I looked at the box score, I sort of remembered it. But looking at it, I thought, well, Patriots, let's see what happened in this game. So simply put, I picked up the credential. I'm like, oh, Patriots played the Bucs. I don't really remember what this game is. I know what the date is. Brady wasn't around, so maybe they won, maybe they lost. I don't know. I looked. And wow, what in the world happened this game to New England? I'll tell you what happened. This is when Tampa Bay is making this run with this epic defense that they had, and they just annihilated Drew Bledsoe in this game. Buccaneers beat the Patriots 27-7 in this one. They were up 27-0 going into the fourth, and then the Patriots scored a late touchdown, and I guess they broke the shutout there. But Drew Bledsoe was sacked 5 times in this game. And through 2 interceptions, no touchdowns. Mike Allstott ran 16 times for 91 yards and a touchdown. Eric Redd also had a touchdown. Had some runs as well. But look, this was pre-Belichick. Obviously, Pete Carroll was there.
These are the Brady Pete Carroll years, Craig, that I lived through. That a real Patriot fan remembers.
But they were okay. They were okay.
They weren't great. They were lackluster at times. They were disappointing more often than not. I remember Mike Allstott very well. Another one of my favorite players. Bring back the fullbacks. We got a guy like Mike Allstott just bowling over.
He wasn't really a fullback. He was a running back.
I don't know what he was, man, but he was a beast. That's all I know. There's a great piece that's floating around social media. It was actually on Facebook. I saw it a couple weeks ago of somebody had a highlight reel they were sharing of Mike Alstead on one of the big football pages. And I was watching Mike Alstead just bowling guys over and thinking to myself, man, where's this guy right now in the NFL? What a fantastic weapon he was and how it kind of suited this team. This was a tough in your face kind of team. Like we talked about before, this was a really strong defense that they had built here with the Warren Sapps of the world and all those guys. And yeah, I don't have a memory of this game, but
not really.
Houlihan Stadium is what I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, it was called Houlihan's.
What was that? I mean, I was in college then, so I guess I missed a lot of things, you know. Have it, me and Michael Jordan were hanging out.
I think this was before they moved into, the new stadium. I have no recollection of
Houlihan's. Like, Houlihan's.
It was a restaurant. It was a restaurant in that area.
There's still Houlihan's. That's why I just want to make sure. We're talking Houlihan's, like the chain restaurant, like Fridays, Ruby Tuesdays.
Yes.
There's still a Houlihan's on Route 22 by my house in New Jersey, which I think I've been to, but not in at least a decade. But I didn't think Houlihan's had the kind of cash on them to be named.
I think the Glazer family bought the team and they owned Houlihan's. I think that's kind of how it started. But will there ever be another player, you know, along the lines of an all-star? Do you think that a big fullback will ever play? Or, I mean, I say fullback, but he really wasn't. He wasn't blocking. He was running. Will there ever be a big dude like that, either African-American or white? I mean, I don't want to just keep going to the white guys and say Peyton Hillis, you know? Like, will there ever be a guy that...
I'm going to say yes, because the NFL is a little cyclical, and every now and then you do get kind of a weird, freakish... You get a Gronkowski. You get a guy that you're not expecting. Like, things happen like that in the NFL.
Have we seen anyone since?
That fits like an all-star? Not with that level of success. Nah, I don't think so. I mean, look, there's not a lot of teams that even use the fullback and run power. I mean, that's the one thing the Patriots still do a lot of. And it hurt them when Devlin got hurt last year. That's when the offense really tailspin. When you can mark it on the calendar, when James Devlin got hurt last year, that offense went into a complete tailspin. They couldn't run the football efficiently, which means they couldn't set up play action, which means everything went down the crapper. And that's why this draft was very important for them. The new tight end that they drafted, they're going to try to convert him into like an H-back kind of fullback system there and kind of make him the new Devlin, who retired this offseason. But yeah, it's funny because you just don't see that type of football. But then again, you know, I always feel like there are these moments where we get this talent that nobody's expecting from a position you're not expecting it. And, you know, next thing you know, there he is. I mean, Von Miller was another guy who was not really like the right size for the position, a lot of people thought. And look at what kind of, you know, terrorizing force Von Miller was for a few years in the NFL. I know he's a little older now, but I feel like that's always the case. I would like to see it. I guess that's the thing I'm getting at. I know I would. Would you love to see another Mike Alstead type guy?
Anything different is cool and good. It's just, I'm...
You know, the last back that I remember who was always looking for content was LeGarrette Blunt. LeGarrette Blunt was always looking to hit somebody.
That's a good example of a guy.
Marshawn Lynch, LeGarrette Blunt. Those are the kind of guys who are looking for contact, looking to put you on your rear end. And they did. And they
Derrick Henry, no?
Derrick Henry's like that, but Derrick Henry's different. I mean, not like he's too big to be all-stot. All-stot was more like a bowling ball almost. Like, you know, he wasn't as big. Derrick Henry's enormous. He's more like Earl Campbell than Mike Alstott. Mike Alstott is, you know, a smaller guy by comparison to Derrick Henry. Nobody should want to tackle Derrick Henry. I know I wouldn't.
Yeah, no, I think that that's kind of the interesting direction that we could potentially be headed. And it would be nice to see some sort of thing like that change in the NFL, to have someone come in like that. All right, coming back next, there was some news yesterday about the XFL. We've got all the latest for you. Big news on the XFL.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
And welcome back. Craig and Joe here with you as we are about to wrap things up. We'll be right back here tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. Eastern, for another edition of Fantasy Sports Today. I know this weekend Joe, you'll be back in action with another edition of Diamond Bets. What can we expect on the show coming up this week?
Diamond Bets, a lot of silliness, that's for sure. We are bringing back Flipping Cards, our little fun quiz show slash baseball card little segment there. It's a lot of fun. We take two crazy baseball cards and ask a question, and we kind of debate back and forth. So if you like a little comedy with your baseball, it's a good time. We're also going to break down the American League West teams, and we'll do some more home run props, too, with our expectation at this point of somewhere around half of a Major League Baseball season. We shall see. But definitely some great conversations, a great baseball talk. Plus, we're going to also get into some of our favorite voices of baseball, that when we think of baseball, what are the voices that play in our head? You know, I know a lot of people love Vin Scully. I do, too. There was something special about staying up late to watch those Dodger games on MLB Network just to hear Vin Scully call a game solo. I used to do it all the time, and I am far from a Dodger fan. But to listen to that man tell stories, to listen to, as a broadcaster, how incredibly smooth and effortless he was and could weave in and out of the game action with stories, and no need for a second guy, no need for anything else. You just see Vin Scully. We talked about some of the characters, like we also Bob Murphy, who was the voice of my childhood on the radio of the New York Mets. I was spoiled. I had Gary Thorne and Bob Murphy calling games when I was a kid on WFAN in New York. And let me tell you, Gary Thorne, one of the A-plus announcers, great hockey voice, also calls the Baltimore Orioles games. And of course, Harry Carey, guys like that. So we got to a fun discussion with that as well. When I say, you know, voices of baseball, who are the names that pop in for you?
In the history or currently?
Oh, just for you personally, is Craig Mitch. You know, everyone has those identifiable
the best
Rizzuto was one for a lot of people.
Yeah, sure. The best story I would say that I have, Harry Callis.
Another great one.
Broadcast for the Phillies for many, many years. Became, you know, decent friends with, I would say, because of seeing him, because the Phillies played the Marlins so often. And one time they came to town, and I asked him to record my answering machine for me.
Oh, that's terrific.
And he did. And he's,
this
I see,
is Craig Fish.
Craig can't get to the phone right now. He's away, but he'll be back soon.
Oh, terrific. The only thing
I think it was on my BlackBerry, I think.
Oh, that's a file I wish you had. That's a good one. I was hoping you would say Craig can't come to the phone because he just got sent down to AAA or something like that.
Yeah, he actually knew exactly what to do. Like, I was really.
Oh, I'm sure you're not the first person to ask him to do that. So, but that's a great story, man. And I was lucky because I went to college in Philadelphia when he was still calling Phillies games. So I got to listen to him all the time too. I've been very blessed when it came to baseball voices in my life. And as a Met fan, as torturous as the games are, it doesn't get much better than Ron Darling, Keith Hernandez, and Gary Cohn together calling games. And that's the one thing, you know, it's the one thing that makes the games watchable, because you can at least listen to those guys. And the best is when the Mets are bad, the frustration of Ron Darling and Keith Hernandez, who are just hyper-competitive guys, especially Hernandez, who just calls out everybody at every given time. I heard Eckersley is a fun listen to also, but I don't think I've ever heard him do a game. And Bob Uecker is another one. Not just as the major league announcer, but Bob Uecker doing regular baseball for the Brewers. It's another great listen to. I remember driving and you could, you know, click on Sirius and you get all the different channels. You can hear him. But it's, I don't want to say it's a lost art form. There's still some great people.
There are very few left.
There's very few of the great ones, and very few of the characters. You know, like, everybody's so clean and everyone's so broadcast cool. Harry Carey was, you know, I mean, everybody knows about, like, the Harry Carey imitations, and, you know, Will Ferrell's obviously is very famous.
Of course.
But let's be honest. Was it all that different? I mean, if Harry Carey said the thing, I often say things that Will Ferrell said when he was playing, it was like, hey, what's your favorite planet? Mine's the sun. Like, of course, like, he would say things like that sometimes.
He would. Ryan Dempster did a great Harry Carey too.
Oh my God.
That was the one thing that I was very fortunate being in the press box covering the Marlins, is that they all came through there at one point. And I made it always a point. I showed, when Dick Enberg was with the Padres, I showed him around. He had never been. I showed him where to go and where his booth was and everything like that. Uecker, all of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, Kirk.
I want to say all of them, but a lot of them I had a
There
were
just so many. You know, the one voice I never cared for, and this is, again, I just never did, and he was a Mets announcer before he was a national announcer, was Tim McCarver. I never cared for him calling the games. I never mind Joe Buck. I know a lot of people always want to take shots at Joe Buck. I think Joe Buck does a pretty good job. And he works a pretty tough schedule, that guy. I don't think he gets any, and he's got a pretty good sense of humor about himself, which I wish everybody would kind of give him a little bit more credit. I mean, you think last year when he's working those football games on top of working the World Series and going back and forth, you know, sleeping for a couple hours. I mean, that's, people don't realize how difficult that is. It's not just calling it a game. A lot more goes into it. But I just feel like everybody's so clean now and everybody's so pristine. And baseball, you know, was in New York, it was Mel Allen and Bob Murphy and Lindsey Nelson and all these guys that pretty much they put up, you know, some of these guys you all know and I know, like Harry Carey, they'd put a bottle and a glass and they'd start calling the game by the seventh inning. Who knows what Ralph Kiner was going to say?
Very true.
I miss it.
Okay, well, one day maybe you'll get it back.
There you go. Check out Diamond Bets for more of that discussion.
Right, this Diamond Bets, on the there you go.
There you go. I knew we started somewhere here.
That's where it began.
But look, okay, this is good. This is fun. This is fun conversation.
We got through. Yeah, we got to an interesting talk here.
The end of the show. What are we going to do?
So I thought we would end the show a little lighthearted, and we did. So goodbye. No, but the XFL Joe is going to be having an auction. They filed Chapter 11. I think I saw a report last year last week that was like, yeah, they still could come back. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I mean, we're gonna laugh. I mean, seriously,
Vince McMahon was buying a lot of IP up and a lot of other things. Yeah, okay, there was a lot of stuff going. A lot of Vince McMahon and WWE on the show today. This is great. Loving it.
I mean, ridiculous. But come back and fold again if you want. But either way, the ridiculousness of the XFL. Now, certainly, a lot of people worked for the XFL and they lost their jobs, and I don't want to make light of that, but the fact that they're having an auction, I thought it would be fun to go through some of the top things that you could buy from the XFL when they have their auction, as they auction off all of their material here from the inaugural and only, well, sort of only, reboot of the XFL season. I never saw an auction for the AAF. But there is one for the XFL.
They couldn't raise enough funds for the auction for the AAF. But yeah, go ahead.
Couldn't find an auctioneer. They asked Lenny Melnick.
I knew you were going to. As soon as you said that, I knew that's where you were going to go with it.
Right.
Oh, Lord. Okay, let's go.
All right. So here we are. Here are the items up for the XFL bankruptcy auction. This is satirical a little bit here. I made all these up, but I think that they're worth talking about. All right. So if you want to buy the XFL season yearbook, it will cost you 25 cents. We'll start off with that. This is probably paying too much for that. I don't think anybody would even want it for 25 cents. Oliver Luck, the commissioner of the league, poor Oliver Luck. He hasn't had a lot. He had a lot to say before the league started. Hasn't had a lot to say since it folded, has he? You could get his chair from his office for $1.50. Says Luck on there, and it's says XFL. You get the XFL logo for $1.50, and I think that I would consider buying his chair for $1.50. I could use.
Depends on how comfortable the chair is. Let's be honest. Yeah.
It does. I'm a very big fan of a good desk chair. This is not the one that I'm sitting in right now. Is not the one that I'm speaking of. Mine has a high top, and I can't use it for this TV show. So, got to get myself another one. I should have got that before I got my new setup. But anyway, okay. Now here's the most expensive item that you could buy in the auction here. Those microphones that were on the players during the game. $60. I mean, that's you know, not a hefty price tag, but you can buy one of their microphones that the players were wearing, a game used microphone, Joe, for $60.
Yeah, I mean, so far the desk chair, because again, it has a use at least, and you know, I could sit in there, pretend I'm Oliver Luck, and you know, yell out orders, or maybe
I could feel comfortable sitting in somebody else's used chair, even if it was free.
It's a good point. You know, depends on what the butt print is like on the chair. You know what I mean? Like,
you're driving down the road in New Jersey, and there it is, a beautiful chair, but it's on the side of the road. You getting it or no?
No, probably not. I guess you're right. All right, so we're 0 for 3 here.
We're 0 for 3. The microphone we may be able to use for the show.
No.
Okay. Nah. All right, item number 4, we have former head coach Mark Trestman. He was the head coach of the Tampa Bay Vipers. I didn't even realize that. You could get the hat that he wore in the games for $2.65.
I don't want Mark Trestman's sweaty hat. It's a hard pass for me, Mish, on this one. Nope.
Even at the price tag for $2.
No, I mean, I want some jerseys, man. That's what I want. I want some helmets. The helmets were cool.
Back at Oklahoma and with the Pittsburgh Steelers, didn't quite have that kind of success. He went on to play in the XFL for a team called the Dallas Renegades, and his jersey is on sale for $5.50, Joe. So is this the winner for you? You throwing $5 down for a Landry Jones XFL jersey?
Yeah, I like some of the jerseys. Look, you poke fun. I thought the XFL product was far better than the AAF and far better than the first time around for the XFL. I liked a lot of the wacky wrinkles they put in the games. I like the kickoffs. I like the 2-3-point conversion thing and the 1-point conversion. I thought all of that was fun. I thought the quality of football wasn't bad, and I thought if they had more time that it might have worked, but unfortunately, the rest is history. You know, the biggest positive for me, this is selfish, is the Black Book got its editor-in-chief, our good friend Tim Heaney, back. It's not the way I wanted to get Tim Heaney back.
Tim did work. Yeah, I do feel bad for those people that lost their jobs.
It's very difficult. But look,
it was set up to fail, as always. I mean, it's never going to work.
Well, look, taking a job for the NFL is one thing. Taking a job for the XFL is another. But look, sometimes you have to take those opportunities when they present themselves. And you have to, you know, you have to go try. And I mean, had it not been for the pandemic, we might not know if it would have succeeded, because I think from what I know, I don't know how you were feeling about it or watching it or not, but
I was feeling it was bad.
Well, did you watch it or you just felt it was bad?
Yes, and I knew it was bad.
I didn't think it was as bad. I was surprised at how much of it I did like and watch. And I thought that I still say there's a place for spring football in America. I know you do not.
No,
but I think there is for people like me that don't care about college basketball. And for people who are not the biggest baseball fans, I think there's room for it. But unfortunately, it just doesn't seem like it's ever going to work out, because none of these leagues.
Why would you say that?
Well, because just for one reason or another. I mean, just bad luck, bad organization. There's
because
so many.
Because it's not going to work. Stop trying. It's over. Don't do it. Don't waste your time. Waste our time. Tell us how great the ratings are week one, and then they plummet in week four, and then the league crashes. It's the same thing with all of these things. Anyway, that'll do it for our show today. Thanks again to everybody who watched. We appreciate it. Thank you to Brett, Danny, Ryan for putting the show together today. For my co-host, Joe Pizzapia, I'm Craig Bish. We'll be right back here tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern, right here for another edition of Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid. Stay on the grid. We'll catch you tomorrow at 11. See ya.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.